Shortly after Russia invaded Ukraine, the Energy Act for Ukraine Foundation was formed. It's an NGO working to put solar and storage technology on critical infrastructure, such as schools and hospitals, to lessen the impact of power outages and rising levels of energy poverty. It was founded by Yuliana Onishchik, who is passionate about protecting the energy independence of Ukrainians while simultaneously supporting green energy development. My colleague, Kelvin Ross, had a conversation with Yuliana at Enlit Europe to learn more about the work they're doing and the positive impact it's having in Ukraine. I'm Pamela Larg, and this is the Energy Transitions Podcast.
Good afternoon, everybody. Thanks for joining us this afternoon. I'm Kelvin Ross. I'm the Editor-in-Chief of Enlit, and welcome to this special edition of our live Enlit Energy Transitions podcast. Today we're going to talk about the work and the ambition and the vision of the Energy Act for Ukraine Foundation, which is an NGO which works to put solar and storage technology on critical infrastructure in Ukraine, mainly schools and hospitals. It was founded in the very few short months after the invasion of Ukraine, and we're going to find out more about the scope of its work and its ambition from its founder and chief executive, Yuliana Onishchik. Thank you for joining us today. Yuliana, you've described your decision to start the Energy Act for Ukraine Foundation as the most obvious decision of your life. Why was it so obvious?
Because at the moment when the war started, I have been already in the energy sector for about 10 years, and I had a quite comprehensive experience going from gas to renewables, regulations, working for grids. So I knew already the value of solar at that moment. And also, as I had an experience constructing my own solar power plant, it is industrial power plant, I got enough. At least at that time, I thought I have enough experience to found an NGO and build solar power plants, small solar power plants for people, which is definitely easier than a big industrial solar power plant. The moment when the war started, at some point in April 2022, I realized that helping country through my foundation and building solar power plants for schools and hospitals is the best. It unites all my skills and knowledge that I gathered before, so that will be the best action where I could, on the one hand, perform myself at the peak and doing a very important things for Ukraine at that moment. So that's why I think that was for me quite obvious, because I just decided to do the best thing I know in my life.
And I first interviewed you 2 years ago at Enlit in Frankfurt. And at that stage, you had just days before finished your very first project, which was a school. And at that point, you had an ambition to deliver 100 projects in 5 years. So how is that ambition tracking?
Yes, actually our ambition is 100 schools and 50 hospitals in 5 years since 2023. 2022 I consider as a pilot time. And I think that we made a tremendous jump, because right now, by the end of this year, we will finish 24 installations in total. We finished 11 installations by now, and the other comes right now. All others are in the process of construction, so we actually have to finish all of them by December. That's a huge challenge, and we are facing different challenges on the way. On the one hand, it's this tempo that we have is huge, right? That requires team on the one hand, that requires finances on the other, and bringing your ambitions into action is already a big challenge that we also discussed today at the summit. But I think that this is exactly what we do. Our aims are very ambitious, so out of 150, 24 will be in place since we started in 2 years.
And you mentioned your team. How big is your team?
Right now we are about 12 people, And we are constantly hiring because it is not enough. We need 20.
Mm-hmm. And you have partners and you have donors, and are they donating money, are they donating equipment, or are your partners, or are our partners helping you in other ways, or is it all a mixture of all?
The first year of war, we saw that most of the partners and donors would like to donate equipment, but this year we changed the focus more to finances, and I explain why, because a lot of different companies would like to enter Ukrainian market, right, to supply their equipment, to help, to start their business in Ukraine and so on. But in order to maintain, to provide a correct maintenance of this equipment, you need time and local companies and people that will learn how to maintain it. So from what we learned is that it is very risky to take unknown equipment and install just to install so that it works for one winter maybe, because the challenges that the grid face in terms of blackouts, poor quality of electricity, they were not made for this equipment. And we experienced that different hybrid solutions from well-known brands and not well-known brands actually all work with errors. If you have blackouts every 2 hours or every 8 hours on and off, it doesn't really work properly. And when you take unknown equipment, then you actually don't have even installers that can maintain it. For some reasons, we are now focused a lot on asking our donors to provide us finances so that we can procure locally from official suppliers that can perform guarantee services. And the donors, your question was who our donors partners? Yeah. Since the last year, Octopus became our partner. And we execute from 9 to 14 installations this year together. And this support helps us to build the team, to get enough expertise to perform these installations. And at the same time, we also have donors. A lot of donors are usually manufacturers, or sometimes it's even not energy-related donor, as L'Oréal Ukraine. Or we had support from associations, German solar associations. Also, right now, we diversify the sources of financial support, and we also entered some grants, which is a bit more difficult to work with rather than with business. So we are more business oriented and we try to involve businesses into their ESG performance more into helping Ukraine and learn from them and also help them to learn more about Ukrainian market, energy market.
And the projects you're doing with Octopus, but also more broadly the other projects, are they all schools and hospitals still?
No, we broaden our activity. We do schools and hospitals are the basis, but we also started constructing the solar power plant for water supply companies. We have requests from kindergartens, but so water supply companies and kindergartens are on the list to do more.
You said you had a request. Do you have projects coming to you wanting you to work with them rather than you going to them?
Both sides, yes, all the time. If one community did a project with us, they tell other communities, and then 20 communities is writing at the same time. It both. We are open to file a request. They can do it online on our website. They write to us letters, but usually it is more us who investigate, analyze, and decide where to build and why. Not all the requests for sure are fulfilled, just because we have our own requirements to where we can build. For instance, for hospitals, we only build hybrid solutions for intensive care units and surgery units, maternity units, and perinatal, and so on. We build for those who need the electricity supply 24 hours per 7. For schools, it's a bit different. Here, we look at the capacity and importance of the school for a region, also whether it suffered or not, whether there are a lot of displaced children So what is the role of this particular school, and also whether they have a bomb shelter? Because in Ukraine, actually in Ukraine right now, if you don't have a bomb shelter, you cannot operate the school. So all of them has to have bomb shelters. So we connect bomb shelter trying to, and they spend a lot of time there. Now, for the last 2 months, missile attacks are immense, again, very active, and we just recently have been to our two openings in Kyiv region, and at the moment of when our team was there, during 2 hours, there were three sirens alarm, and when the sirens are on, they have to stop their education and classes, go into bomb shelters, settle. When it's off, they again have to be back to the class, and then it happens three times during 2 hours. So they just go back and forth. And yeah, and also conditions in bomb shelters are not always nice. I would say not nice. So at least we try to provide electricity for schools, for bomb shelters, lights, sport classes, sometimes kitchen. Yeah.
A key part of the foundation's mission is to educate the people of Ukraine about renewables, the benefits of renewables. How have you gone about that, and how important is it to you and to them to be able to see the renewables, so they're not getting renewable power from maybe a wind farm that's miles away that they can't see? How important is it that they can physically see it on the roof of whether it's a school or a hospital?
We haven't done a research whether for Ukrainians it's important to see the panels, but I remember that when I saw it for the first time, I was so impressed, and that I was impressed by the beauty of it, by the value of it, and then I realized that I want to do these things. And I think the level of awareness about renewables in Ukraine is poor, especially in communities that unite a lot of villages, right? So there are not so many big cities in Ukraine. And as the awareness about renewables by the state is a low quality, people think that renewables is something that is very far from them, something that they will never have, or something that is very expensive, right? It is also lack of education and lack of information and lack of motivation to actually research this information. So there are a lot of levels where we are losing this culture of renewables within the Ukrainian community. So our job is to provide this provide solar power plants for the electricity supply, but actually it is only a part from a big idea behind, and that is linked to our vision that by doing this, by actually doing and constructing it for schools and hospitals, not only because this is vulnerable customers, but also because this is the main buildings where a lot of people come and go, a lot of people are raised. And that's the places where we can influence their mind. And the idea for schools behind was that if you, as a Ukrainian, as a teenager, you faced the war, you had a school with no solar power plant, and then the war happened and you were out of Ukraine, and then you're back, and that your school is not only repaired by the help of many NGOs, but it also has a solar power plant on top, and you have it in your small school somewhere in a deep Ukraine, that definitely will influence your vision of your, the vision of your life. And that should become a normality. So our NGOs try to bring renewables closer to average Ukrainian, to people, so that they in the future choose this profession, or they are excited and they just would like to be an engineer or work in sustainability. And I definitely believe, I'm sure that in 10 years, these kids will remember that they had it in school. So this is about education. And within that, we not only built, we also, that we actually also did 2 years ago, that we developed our educational course on sustainability and green energy with experts. And we provide a 1 month classes for kids in schools where we build solar power plants in a gaming form, talking to them about sustainable way of living, the problem of plastic, the problem of unconscious consumption of everything in their life, what is the place for renewables. So it's a very small steps, but for now we already provided this education for more than 800 children. And our plan is to enlarge this education to more schools than we just where we build solar power plants. So we need to do more. And we also want to take kids to wind plants, to solar plants for a picnic, I don't know, for a class. This is a part of education for kids. And I think this is crucially important to raise right now Ukrainians with this culture of the conscious use of energy resources, of natural resources, and we have to do it by example. We cannot just talk about it. We need to build, we need to show that we do things, that we do things for them. And I think that should work. For women, you also ask about education, and we are about to start, but the necessity in Ukraine is also to engage more women into renewable sector. And we have in plans to make a big program, but for now we decided to make a survey to see what actually stops women from switching to renewable energy or to follow this profession in solar, why they don't do that, or what kind of thoughts and ideas they have that they are not going to this profession, because we do lack 5 million of workforce, and each of us is facing the same problem that there is not enough people, also because of war, because of mobilization and war, and because it's a more male-dominated industry. So this is also a part of activity, and that's how we evolve from the last time when I talked to you, trying to cover now more the education part.
You've made amazing progress since the last time that we talked.
So. We try hard, yes.
And we wish you well with that ambition of trying hard. And we look forward to catching up with you, perhaps at Inlit Europe next year, to see what progress you've made then. But until then, thank you for joining me today. Thank you for listening in the audience. If you've enjoyed this live podcast, it will be available as part of our series. And if you've enjoyed it, you can catch up with all the other episodes by subscribing to our Energy Transition series. But for now, give a very big hand for Juliana Anischuk.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Energy Transitions podcast, brought to you by Inlit and Friends. That's a wrap from me, Pamela Log, and our producer, Kamo Motse. We hope you can join us next time. Visit inlit.world or subscribe for more episodes.